Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lifanov El Esav Achiv Arza Seir Sedeyadom. And Yaakov sent Malachim before him to his brother Esav to the land of Seir in the Sedei Edom, which is the territory that Yaakov's brother Esav was given to by God. Now the word Malachim, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, there is a dispute among commentaries. Targum Onkelos, for example, translates the word Malachim as messengers, human beings that he sent as a delegation to Esav with a message. Rashi and many others say that Malachim means angels, heavenly angels. They point to the immediately preceding topic at the end of Parshat Vayetze, that Yaakov encounters two groups of angels, and he names them Machanaim, the camps, and there's your dispute. We'll talk more about that in a moment. OU Israel presents... Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. This one hopefully is not a rerun. It is live at this very moment. By the time you listen to it, it will have been recorded. Recording and first availability, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 12th day of Kislev, 5778, corresponding this year to November 30th. And that's the story. This issue is for Parshat Vayishlach, but before we get into the Sedra, let us say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai, Adonai Shima V'Koli, Tehiena Aznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai, Imavono Tishmorya Adonai Mia Amod, Ki Imacha Hasalicha L'Ma'an Tivare, Kiviti Adonai Kivata Nafshi Vilidvaro Hochalti. Nafshi Ladonai Mi Shomarim Laboker, Shomarim Laboker. Yachel Yisrael El Adonai Ki Im Adonai Hachesed Vaharbe Imo Fedut. Vehu Yifde et Yisrael Mikol Avonotav. Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael Hanatunim Batsara Vashivya Haomedim Ebein Bayam Uvein Bayabasha. המקום ירחם עליהם ויוציאם מצרה לירווחה ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. Today being the 12th of Kislev, it is 2 days after the 10th, and it is 2 days before the 2nd of December. A long time ago, I almost told you how long, the two dates coincided. December 2nd was Yud Kislev, and it was the day that I became a father, because it was the day that my first daughter was born. So I wish her a happy birthday, and me, whatever you call it, happy being a father day. And it's been a good thing all of these years, being a father and then adding to it being a grandfather. And Amir Sashem, I would like to be around to be a great-grandfather and continue to have nachas for my children, grandchildren, and even great-grandchildren for as long as God will give me. So happy birthday, Miri, and let us move into Vayishlach. I get a little agitated with these sedras. The sedras are so scarce as far as mitzvot are concerned that you need to pay total attention to the storyline. And the storyline is kind of upsetting. And I'll tell you why I say that. The first sedra of Bereishit was about creation of the world and Adam and the generations until things deteriorated, leading into Noah, the one bright spot in God's eyes, and then the destruction of most of the world and starting all over again from Noah. And then at the end of Parshat Noah, we are introduced to people who are very important to us, the Jewish people, the first patriarch and matriarch, Avraham and Sarah. And from there, we continue with Avraham and Sarah, and then Yitzchak and Rivka, and then Yaakov, Rachel, and Leah, which is where we were last week in Parshat Vayetze, and leading into Vayishlach, which is mostly about Yaakov and about his children and Dina and the wives, Rachel and Leah. And then next week's Sedra already starts with Vayeshev and the terrible enmity that Yosef's brothers felt for him and the sale of Yosef. And we end up, even though there is sort of a reconciliation among the brothers, it really doesn't end the book of Bereishit well, because we end up a large number of people in a ever-growing family, which will become a nation, but we end up in Egypt, and we start the next book of Shemot, Exodus, bitterly enslaved and oppressed in Egypt. And let's get back on this track. You've got clear enemies of the Jewish people. Now, I'm using these terms loosely because they weren't yet the Jewish people. They were the founding fathers of the future Jewish people. They were Hebrews and later Israelites. And the term Jew has a specific definition, but we could use it in a more broad sense, in a broader sense, and mix the foundation with the building, so to speak. So we have two enemies that are outlined and presented from Parshat Toledot into Vayetze, into Vayishlach, in the persons of Lavan and Esav. Lavan is brother-in-law to Yitzchak. Lavan is uncle to Yaakov. And in this week's Sedra, in last week's Sedra, Lavan became father-in-law twice over to Yaakov. And we read in the Torah and in the commentaries and in the Midrashic literature that Lavan attempted to vanquish Yaakov, to cut off his future and therefore line of descent, which grows into the nation of Israel, in various different ways. It goes from a Midrashic source which tells us that he attempted to poison Eliezer, who was coming to find a suitable bride for Yitzchak. Yaakov isn't even born yet, and Lavan is not his uncle and certainly not yet his father-in-law. He is only the brother of Rivka, but we have sources that indicate that he tried to nip the whole thing in the bud, as the expression goes. And then the deceit and repeated deceit and the taking advantage of Yaakov in Vayetze, and the whole business when Yaakov finally decides he's had enough and he's leaving, and God tells him to leave, and what's his payment and salary, etc., etc. Very hard times with Lavan. Then we need to take a step back and then into this week's Sedra, where back in the end of Toledot, we read in the Psukim, in the verses of the Torah, that Esav planned to kill his brother Yaakov after his father would pass away. To his credit, and this is like only to thing to his credit, he is considered the epitome of a respectful, honoring son to Yitzhak. And even though he hates Yaakov and he wants to kill him, he'll wait until Yitzhak is out of the picture before he does such a thing. Rivka Imenu, father of both Yaakov and Esav, which the Torah keeps reminding us, finds out about Esav's intention and engineers Yitzchak's sending Yaakov, and this is all the beginning of last week's Sedra, the end of the previous week, to Lavan's house to find a wife, where he comes back with four wives. Now, after an absence that was initiated by his fleeing Be'er Sheva, the house of his father and mother, in order to be saved from Esav, he's coming back to Eretz Yisrael, and as we read in the opening verse, he sends messengers with gifts to his brother Esav. This will be the first time they have seen each other in over 20 years, and a lot has happened in that time, and Yaakov does not know what to expect. He is justifiably afraid. He is, maybe we can say, unjustifiably very afraid. I've seen commentaries who point out that Vayira, and he is afraid, is something that is normal. But Vayira Me'od, that he was very, very afraid, is Mugzam, exaggerated. And he should not have been that afraid. It reminds me of the days back in the Gulf War, beginning of the 90s, when Israel was under the threat of Scud missiles from Iraq, and we had gas masks, and we had sealed rooms and procedures and sirens and not being out at nighttime, and people were nervous. That's okay. And some were afraid, and that was okay too. But the people who panicked and could not handle their fear, they were the ones who were demonstrating a lack of trust in God, that if we do our share, he will do his, and we will survive, as we all did, or almost all of us. Here, you have maybe the original lessons in trying to find a balance between bitachon, trust and faith in God, and what's known as hishtadlut, or in the more colloquial way that we would say it, hishtadlus, which is human effort. I remember, sorry to bring it up again, from the Gulf War period, one of the Knesset members from the religious parties, was interviewed on radio, and he said he doesn't have a gas mask, he doesn't have a sealed room, he trusts in God. And I felt that that was very inappropriate and conveyed the wrong message to those listening, because having a gas mask and having a sealed room and having a procedure to follow when there is a siren is not a lack of trust in God. It is acknowledging that we are partners with God, and we have a very good deal with him. He basically says to us, you, human beings, you, the Jewish people, do what you can. And I'll take care of that part of the process that you can't do. We are human. He is not. He is infinite. And therefore, it makes for a perfect partnership. Should I get a gas mask, God? Of course you should get a gas mask. You know why? It is a human opportunity, a human thing to do. Should I seal my room? Of course you should seal your room and bring your family in there and have them put on gas masks and tape up the doors so that you will have done what you are capable of doing. Shall we divert the Scud missiles so they don't land in Israel? God says, I'll handle that. You can't do that. You could do the best you can. I shouldn't say that. I remember fondly having 2 weeks of Milouim during the Gulf War, and one time we were out in a caravan convoy of army vehicles, and we stopped, got out of our vehicles, and watched in the sky as we saw a battery of Patriot missiles chasing a Scud and deflecting it. Did not succeed in blowing it up, but it deflected it so it landed in a harmless place. Anyway, not the point. So all of that is human effort, and God takes over the rest. When you heard in the Gulf War of a rocket that penetrated a building and failed to explode, there is the hand of God. Human beings can't handle that. God can. Perfect partnership. Back to the Sedra. Yaakov Avinu decides to prepare gifts of different kinds of animals, cows and sheep and goats and camels and donkeys, to send to Esav as an appeasing gift. He could do that because it's a human activity and effort. He then divides his camp into two, stating that if Esav does attack one, at least the other one will go free. That is a strategy. And he prays for God's help. That is Hishtadlus. Where God comes in, that's his job and his business. Perfect arrangement. There is a concept in Jewish teaching called Maasei Avot Siman Lebanim. The deeds of our ancestors are signs and signposts and hints and allusions to what the children, we the Jewish people, will do. We can broadly include the fact that when the Torah tells us stories, it is not just sitting us down before bedtime to tell us a nice story or a not nice story. Every story in the Torah is there to teach us something. Those portions of the Torah that are filled with mitzvot have their own justification for being there because they teach us what to do and what not to do. But so do the stories. And what we keep seeing here is what will happen throughout Jewish history. So Esav hates Yaakov, and he plans to kill him, and that doesn't work. And he sends his son Eliphaz to catch Yaakov and kill him, and that doesn't work. And he entrusts his grandson, Amalek, with the task of continuing for all time the perennial battle against the Jewish people, to the point where God declares in the Torah that this is a battle against him, in addition to it being against the Jews, and that he pledges to do his share at destroying Amalek. At the same time, commanding us to destroy Amalek. So, it goes from the personal story of two twins into the national stories of two nations and beyond. Because Israel is a nation, but Esav, at least on a a figurative level, has spawned many, many nations, and in various forms, I'm referring to the ones who seek the destruction of the Jewish people. Now, you can argue the technical distinctions between Amalek and today's Arabs, and Iran, and Persia of old. But the bottom line here, if we blur some of the distinctions and see the core of the issue, is we, throughout Jewish history, have been the special targets of peoples whose intent was to either tear us away from our belief in our Judaism, or physically destroy us, or some combination of the two. So, from these episodes, we get a big, big picture of Maasei Avot Siman Labanim. And that put us into position to also attempt to appease our enemies, and also protect ourselves and prepare to fight, and also to invoke God's help in the various battles that we have had throughout history. Some of them have ended in great joy for us, and others have extracted heavy toll, and yet the bottom line is the Jewish people continues to exist and grow and flourish. Maybe an indicator that we're dealing with more than just tension between two brothers is the fact that the Torah describes a battle or a wrestling match, which is what the opening melody was from World Something or Other Wrestling, and between Yaakov, who finds himself alone when he went back over the brook to retrieve small vessels that he had left behind. And he is encountered by an ish, literally a man. But our sources tell us that this was no mere mortal. It was the guardian angel of Esav, attempting to do the same thing that Esav wanted to do and didn't succeed, and the Sarshel Esav doesn't succeed either. However, it is very telling for then and for the future that even though Yaakov wouldn't be vanquished, he left the encounter with the guardian angel of Esav limping. And that very well describes Jewish history, where we have been attacked in pogroms and inquisitions and the Holocaust and many other things as well. And we survive, but very often we come out limping. And that is an important indicator. That was the word that maybe I should have used. Maasei Avot, the deeds of our ancestors, are indicators. Siman Labanim. Maybe that's a good word. Okay. The next day, the encounter comes, and we have something famous and obvious to discuss. but I think it's very important in light of today's world. Finally, the two brothers meet, and Yaakov, now here's a good word, or good two words, both beginning with the letter H. Yaakov humbles himself before Esav. Some say he humiliates himself in front of Esav, bowing repeatedly to him, calling him my master, calling himself your humble servant. And there are criticisms directed towards Yaakov Avinu for overdoing that aspect of this encounter. Then Esav runs to Yaakov, he embraces him, and he kisses him. The word, and he kisses him, is Vayishakehu. And there is an old tribal custom, scribal custom, that when the word Vayishakehu is written, there is a dot placed above each of the six letters of the word. The dot over words, over letters, would be the equivalent of an asterisk with a footnote. Here the footnote is in the commentaries. It's not in the Torah scroll itself, but the dots are there. So, and he kissed him, asterisk. What does that mean? Well, the classic definition of asterisk, for anyone who came from the United States at a certain time, or within a certain range of time, knows that the classic definition of an asterisk is that even though Roger Maris hit 61 home runs, breaking Babe Ruth's record of 60 in a season, it was in a 162-game season, which was longer than the 154 games that Babe Ruth hit his 60. So there's your asterisk. Here, what does it mean? It means either he really didn't kiss him with all his heart, or he kissed him with all his heart. There's actually a dispute there. Well, which is it? I don't know. I can't tell you. I don't know if anybody could tell you. But there is one thing that I can tell you, because that's what the commentaries agree on. But let's first repeat what they don't agree on. The attention called to the word Vayishakehu when he kissed him is to indicate that it was not a genuine kiss, that he still maintained his negative feelings about his brother. And that would call for an asterisk. But you know what else would also? That he kissed him with all his heart. What? Esav kissed Yaakov sincerely with all his heart? That's noteworthy, and that gets the dots over each letter, and that gets the proverbial asterisk. What the commentaries agree on, what the sources agree on, is that there is, and this is the language that is used, halacha hi biyadua. It is a well-known, I would have to use, fact of Jewish life. A well-known fact of Jewish life that Esav sone Yaakov. That the Esav original and the Esavs of the world hate Yaakov and the Yaakovs of the world, namely the Jewish people. Everybody agrees to that. It's only that, but at this moment, he was overwhelmed with sincere brotherly emotion and kissed him with all his heart. Or not. But it's important to point out what everybody agrees on. Do not think that this even sincere kiss, and certainly not a kiss that was just a photo op, like the handshake on the White House lawn, which nobody should have been fooled into thinking was genuine. You want to say that Sadat's visit to Jerusalem, which just celebrated, or whatever you want to call it, 40 years, that was sincere? I would like to think so. And I would like to think that Sadat was an exception to the rule, but unfortunately, those who hold by the rule were the ones who assassinated him, and the ones that continued in leadership, and the ones that till this very day are outspoken opponents of the State of Israel and the Jewish people, separately or joined. And we have to take it right out of Parshat Vayishlach and know this fact. This does not mean that there aren't individuals, unfortunately a small minority, individuals among the Muslims of the world, the Arabs of the world, the Christians of the world, the Catholics of the world, the atheists of the world. There are some people who truly admire, without resentment, and even like the Jewish people. But the overwhelming majority harbor negative feelings, whether they act on them or not. And I believe that it is total folly not to take the lesson of Halacha hi biyadua she'esav sone li'Yaakov. There are those in the world honest enough to be outspokenly against the people of Israel, the State of Israel, and to say that their goal is to wipe them off the face of the earth. Nasser, Yamach Shemo, who was the prime instigator, we'll say, of the Six-Day War, was outspoken in saying that if it cost him 1 million Egyptian soldiers, he would drive Israel into the sea. As despicable as that is, there's an honesty there that he did not hide the fact that he wanted to destroy the Jewish people. And we've had enemies like that in the past. Haman comes to mind of the Purim story, because that was his desire, and his plot was hatched. He was executed almost a year before the plot was supposed to be acted upon. And the rest is the story of the Megillah. But this is the kind of enemy that we have throughout Jewish history and to this very day. And those who want to say, well, wait a minute, there's a difference because the Palestinian Arabs, whoever they are, feel threatened by the Jews and feel that the Jews are occupying their territory and feel that the Jews are taking away their land. Nonsense. Nonsense. And it doesn't justify what the Arabs do. It doesn't justify their education system, which portrays Israel as the hated enemy, where little kids who are first learning the ABCs, or whatever the equivalent of that is, will say A is ammunition to use against Israel, and B is this against Israel, and the whole thing is skewed that way, and this is all documented, then we are confronted with Esav. You want to argue that the Arabs claim, or the Muslims claim, descent from Yishmael, not from Esav? Not the point. We're talking about the spiritual heirs of Esav, not the biological and genealogical heirs. And that's something that comes right out of the Parsha and says, listen to what the Parsha is saying. Listen to this and learn a lesson from it. Before we move on to the next part of what I'd like to say, let's listen to a song by Yonatan Sheinfeld. The words come from Le David Hashem Orivi Ishi, Tehillim, Psalm 27, which is traditionally said each day from Rosh Chodesh Elul through Hoshana Rabbah, twice a day. But fitting into what we've been talking about is the first verse, the Lord is my light and my salvation, whom then shall I fear? If I really and truly believe in God and that he's on our side, I shouldn't be afraid of anything. The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evil men close in on me to devour my flesh, it is they, my enemies and foes, who stumble and fall. Should war break out, and this is the main verse of the song, should war break out against me, still I would be confident. And we need that level of bitachon to go along with a very, very high level of hishtadlus, which in the state of Israel means preparing and building the strongest possible army, but with total moral values that make it a natural ally to God. Yonatan Shainfeld.
לדוד השם עוזי ואישי ממירו השם השם העוז חיי ממי אפרון לדוד השם עוזי ואישי ממירו השם השם העוז חיי ממי אפרון תחנה אולי מחנה לא יראו ליבי אם תוקום אולי מלחמו וזו יסני ביתיה אם תחנה אולי מחנה לא יראו ליבי אם תוקום אולי מלחמו וזו יסני ביתיה דוד השם עולי ואישי ממירו השם השם עוז חיי ממי אפרון לדוד השם עולי ואישי ממירו השם השם עוז חיי
come to a point I alluded to in the beginning. And it's really what makes me nervous these weeks. Because when Vayishlach is over, we are temporarily done with the presentation and the reminder of the enemy that is Esav. But moving into next week's Sedra, we become very much aware of an even more dangerous enemy, and that is ourselves. The expression shooting ourselves in the foot comes to mind when we see what Jews can do to each other. Now, it's a little ironic that Esav and Yaakov were twins, same father and same mother, and yet one represents the Jewish people and the other represents the enemy of the Jewish people. In contrast, upcoming, Yosef and his brothers, same father, different mother, and this is the internal threat that we face. We have, unfortunately, a long history of divisions within the Jewish people, religious and non-religious, modern and traditional, Ashkenazi and Sephardi, ultra-Orthodox, a term I don't like, and Dati Lu'umi, religious national, Orthodox, conservative, reform. It just goes on and on. Women's rights, not women's rights, and a goal which we only seem to realize in time of war is something that we should strive for in time of peace, and that is a national unity where all Jews are considered part of the Jewish people. And it does not mean that you have to compromise your principles, does not mean you have to accept on a religious level different people's behavior. But the overwhelming feeling should be one of we're all Jews. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen, or not much. So as we enter the period of Parshiot, Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayigash, Vayechi, and a lot more in the Torah, and a lot in Tanakh, we need to pull our act together so that we can handle the enemies on the outside, and that'll be easy. But we need to work on ourselves and not become vulnerable to enemies from all over because we can't pull ourselves together. This also echoes very much in the Hanukkah story, where the main part of the story is the victory of the Jews over the Greeks. But the underlying second-level story is the tension between those Jews who embraced Hellenism and wanted to modernize and accept the Greek culture, and they said, time to forget about the old antiquated practices of Judaism, compared or contrasted with those who held steadfastly to the sacred traditions of Torah and mitzvot throughout history. So here we go again. It happens every year, these reminders, both in the Torah, both in the calendar, and we need to pull our act together and find the right, pleasant way to share the Torah feelings and values that we have with our fellow Jews, with a firm belief that inside every Jew, no matter how leftist and assimilated and anti the person can be, is what is traditionally known as the pintaliyid, the spark of true Judaism, the soul of the person that reflects what he really aspires towards, not the way he's behaving today. And nurture that rather than being totally confrontational. A lot simpler to say than to do, but I will leave you with this and wish you Shabbat Shalom, v'hishtameach.
יחד כולם אוידו והמליכו ויומו, אוידו והמליכו ויומו.